I'm Jeff Sickinga, Executive Director of the Ashbrook Center, and this is The American Idea, where we discuss the ideas, people, and events that have made America what it is today. We believe that by understanding our history and our principles, we can better live up to the promise of the American founding and preserve our ongoing experiment in self-government. Welcome to The American Idea.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of The American Idea. Today, we're going to be talking about an issue that is really central to our country's future health and flourishing, civic health and civic flourishing in all of its manifestations. It's an issue that my guest has spent many, many hours, months, years thinking about. And he and I have together recently published a book on the subject, and that is America's Civic Education Crisis. What is it? What's causing it? And what can be done about it? And I'm joined today by my old friend, an old friend of the Ashbrook Center, David Davenport. David Davenport, as many of you I'm sure know, was formerly the president of Pepperdine University, very successful tenure at Pepperdine, moved to the Hoover Institution, and was involved in leadership at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University, and is now helping Ashbrook, and has been helping Ashbrook on our civic education projects, including as a member of Ashbrook's National Advisory Board on Civic Education. David is an expert in the field. He's given a lot of time and thought to it. Welcome, David Davenport.
Thanks, Jeff. Always good to be with you.
David, your thinking about civic education certainly started before your work with the Hatch Foundation on what is now called the Hatch Report, but it was certainly developed and articulated in the Hatch Report. For our listeners who might not be so familiar with the field, tell us about your initial work on what is now called in the field the Hatch Report.
Sure. The Hatch Foundation, which was started by Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, wanted to provide a seminal report on civic education. And they noticed that I had done a lot of work in the field, and they asked if I could bring together a report. The report includes what I think are the hallmarks of the crisis, certainly, and what might be done about them. What the Hatch Foundation uniquely challenged me to do was to also think about the downstream effects of the civic education crisis. How is it hampering our democracy? Lack of trust in government because of lack of understanding, lack of young people participating in democracy, including low voting rates. Young people, even inclination towards socialism, which would have been unthinkable a few decades ago. So they asked me to go a little bit deeper on the effect of our civic education crisis, which I did study for the first time in the Hatch Report. So it covers the civic education crisis, how I think it came about, and what we could do about it, and what's happening downstream from that if we don't do anything about it.
Obviously, our listeners are deeply concerned with civic health of America and civic education, of course. But your findings in the Hatch Report, what did you find about what, in fact, is the crisis and what are some of the causes?
The crisis, I think, is that whereas civic education, frankly, in the earliest days of our democracy, civic education was the primary purpose of public schools. And you and I cite in our book some evidence for that. Then I'd say as recently as the 50s, 60s, maybe into the 70s, there was a more robust teaching of civics in the schools. And beginning sometime probably in the 1980s, other curricular priorities developed in the country. We became alarmed by Sputnik, the Russian shot into outer space, and we thought we needed more science education. We became alarmed because our students weren't performing well on international tests on reading and math and core subjects. So we moved to more work in those areas, including lots and lots of testing, which takes up a lot of time. both preparing for and executing a big testing regime. Now STEM has come along, science, technology, engineering, and math as a big priority. So it seems like every decade or two, we have some big educational emergency or crisis. We want to reshape education to meet the crisis. But of course, we don't add hours to the school day or months to the school year. In fact, if anything, the school year is getting a little shorter over time. So something has to give way. And what's lost teaching time in our schools is broadly the humanities and social sciences, but specifically civic education. So that by now, there's very little civic education in elementary and middle schools. And there's basically a one semester course in high school, which is too little too late. And frankly, not even every state requires that bare minimum. So that's kind of the state of civic education today and my own view on how we got there.
So David, it's really interesting because as you say, you out of the Hatch Report, you and I started working together on a book, right. which is now out, A Republic If We Can Teach It. But I remember in our initial conversations, one of the things that amazed me was the extent of the decline in civic knowledge. As we put it in the book, the crisis is there's less U.S. history and government being taught to young people. And when it is taught, it's worse. Can you say a little bit more about the less part? How much less are students learning and how serious is the civic knowledge problem?
Well, probably the most reliable indicator is the so-called NAEP, N-A-E-P test, which is often called our nation's report card. These are tests given nationally in 4th, 8th, and 12th grade. Unfortunately, the history and government tests are only given in the 8th grade. A declining emphasis is certainly illustrated there. The most recent test, 2022, disclosed that only 22% of American eighth graders were proficient or better in their understanding of government or civics, and only 14% were proficient or better in history. The advanced placement test verifies that of the 50 plus advanced subjects tested in the advanced placement test, civics and history are always in the bottom five. So it's not a fluke. Basically, students are not learning history and civics. Even among adults, you know, there are these tests that show adults can't pass the civics part of the U.S. citizenship test, which immigrants pass at a 90% rate. Americans don't know the rights and the First Amendment. They don't know the three branches of government. There have been the Pew Foundation and others have done all kinds of studies and surveys that show that Americans just don't understand their government and how it works. And that problem is particularly acute among those teenage through, say, age 30, age 60 and above do understand it better, which again reflects to me that at one point we did have better civic education than we do today.
Yeah, it seems to me like the gap is, as I think our research indicated, that the gap has never been bigger between what young people, what older people know, and much less what younger people know. It's right. The biggest gap. And it also, as I recall, in writing our book, certainly coming out of your research, this notion that the downstream effects, because some people might say, okay, so what if kids don't know our history as well? Right. The downstream effects that you highlighted, of course, were, how can you keep a republic if you don't know what one is? Also eroding trust in institutions, as you said, declining rates of participation, not just in voting, but in civic organizations, and a sense of being part of an American community. And I was really alarmed by this poll that came out, and it's been repeated in lots of places, in Gallup in 2022, I think it was, that said, you know, are you extremely proud to be an American? And only about 25% of young people said they were. And it's largely because of what they don't know about America, and also what they might wrongly believe about America.
Correct. I, as you know, Jeff, in the writing of our book, I'm more of a policy guy. And so my concern is how much are we requiring on the policy side and teaching of civics and history? You're more the education guy. And I think you rightly point out that an equal problem is the quality of what we're teaching, both in terms of it being interesting, relevant, compelling, and in the sense of not being indoctrination, but education. and in the sense of not producing bias in the teaching. I mean, we it's no mistake that a lot of young people have trouble loving America because one of the prime narratives they're taught is that America had an ugly founding. We had selfish founders. Capitalism is a selfish form of government. I mean, they're just taught all kinds of myths that cause them not to be able to love America. So both in the amount of civic education that's required, and I'd say in the quality and bias problem areas, we've really got a chore on our hands to turn this around.
One of the things that, again, also I think grew out of the Hatch report was thinking about, you know, a lot of people have recognized the crisis that exists, and they might not have quite the same diagnosis as you and I do, but they recognize the thing exists, and they have proposed some ideas. For example, we talk in the book, and you've talked about at length, the idea of action civics.
Right.
As a response to the crisis, and the idea that maybe action civics is not, in fact, the right answer to the problem.
Right. It's of course, it's a challenge in all classrooms in America to hold student interest these days. They have so many compelling media opportunities that to just go into a class and read a boring textbook and listen to a teacher lecture, it's hard to hold their interest and attention. So one solution that's been proposed is, as you say, action civics, where instead of having kids study principles and so forth of history and civics, they just go out into the world and they engage in civics. And so they go to city council meetings or they attend protests on issues that they care about. But of course, that's not a great form of education. I'm not saying it's not relevant entirely, but even in science classes, for example, you wouldn't just go out in the field and start doing random experiments. You would start by studying principles in a classroom, developing a hypothesis, then going into the field and testing your hypothesis, then coming back in the classroom and write up your results. So you could use activity of that kind in a good civic education. But to just substitute, in effect, action for knowledge is really at best putting the cart before the horse. And I think it's not a helpful way to reorganize civic education.
So another response that we talked about, of course, is, and that has gained a lot of prominence over the last 5 years or so, is the 1619 Project and its take on American history and civics and what it proposes. You've been, I think, a thoughtful critic of the 1619 Project. What's wrong with it as an approach to American civic education?
Well, if I could get a little bit of running start to that project, I actually go back to the 1980s with Howard Zinn's, the publication of Howard Zinn's textbook, A People's History of the United States, which, as Zinn himself said, is an attempt to write America's history from the point of view of the losers and the oppressed, the people who've been harmed and marginalized. And so he says, you know, the founding was not an attractive sort of thing. It was an ugly thing because the founders were slaveholders and they were wealthy landowners. And America was built to favor them. Checks and balances aren't to run a good republic, but instead they're to protect the founders' personal interests. And it just goes right on through to, well, not quite today. It was written in the 1980s. So on the heels of that, a number of new narratives have come up to explain American history. And one of the most important, as you say, is the 1619 Project, done by someone at the New York Times, who says we don't start the American story and we don't date the American founding to 1776, the Revolution Declaration, or 1787, the Constitution. We have to go back to 1619 when the first slaves came to the continent. And that's really the beginning of the American story. And so it becomes a story about slavery and about economics, not about the uniqueness of freedom or the uniqueness of the Constitution or the founding of the government. It really kind of seeks to change the whole American story. And once again, it's not a very attractive story. And once again, as in the case of action civics, I'm not saying that you could never talk about the issues raised by the 1619 Project.
Right, right.
Slavery is an important issue, and you and I don't believe in ignoring challenging issues. But you don't need to reinvent the entire American story based on that. And I think that's a mistake. And And more than that, I think it's actually a political agenda, an intentional political agenda, and it's being used as such.
Yeah, and one of the things that, as you say, it's political agenda, and one of the things that you talked about in the Hatch Report and that we, I think, elaborated on more in the book is, you know, thinking about criticizing Action Civics or the 1619 Project or the fact that we're doing less and worse history and civics, because to say, you know, what's the purpose of a civic education? And as we outline, we sort of take our inspiration from what Ronald Reagan said, right, in his farewell address to the nation, we need informed patriots. And the problem is we don't have, it's not producing patriots and it's not producing informed citizens. And it's certainly not producing informed patriots.
No, and as you point out in your work at the Ashbrook Center, the point of history and civic education is not to memorize a lot of dates and events. It's to create citizens. And it does take a more compelling teaching. And I think it might be a good time to elaborate on the work you do at the Ashbrook Center and how nicely that fits with our call for an improved format for teaching civics and history.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, really, that's part two of the book, right? And it's striking to me that, because I'm sure some of our listeners, maybe some who are even in the classroom, think, yeah, or have children or grandchildren that say, I see this, I know this is around, my kids, you know, get their civic knowledge from social media or something like that, and it's really shallow and not very accurate and not producing the kind of informed patriotism, right? But the question is, but is there any solution to this? And it strikes me that the beginning of the solution is just to begin by going to the kind of the fundamental issue of, well, civic education is a form of education. What's education supposed to do? And you've already said it's not indoctrination, right? It's not right to pose opinions on people. And it's not even primarily to give them information to ingest, right? And then spit back out on some test and then forget about it, which I think is the experience of a lot of young people in lots of places. But to get them thinking deeply about not just the what of America, which they need to know, and not just the how America works, but the why of America.
Right.
The purposes and principles behind things. And that's that kind of education that we've certainly at the Ashbrook Center try to do for students and teachers. And I remember in a conversation we were having in working on the book, you relayed this really interesting story you had about your own experience teaching a seminar of teachers.
Right.
Focusing on primary documents and really getting into the why conversation.
Right.
That experience, what did it show you about the possibility of a solution to this crisis?
Well, I was merely teaching one segment of American history, the Depression New Deal, with my colleague, the late Gordon Lloyd. We were in Chicago with public school teachers, and they were asked by Ashbrook to read primary documents. They read three speeches by Hoover and three by Roosevelt. They read three portions of three bills that were passed in the first 100 days of the New Deal, and they read some Supreme Court decisions commenting on that. And it was just amazing to me that in the course of, say, a 4, 5, 6 hour Saturday seminar, you could just see even hardcore, longtime school teachers, their eyes were opened, because they were seeing that there were multiple sides to these issues. They were seeing that there was complexity there. It was not just three paragraphs in a textbook, you know, reducing the Great Depression to what the editor of the textbook thought it was all about. And there was an excitement to discussing and engaging in that. And then, of course, what we hope is that teachers will take that and turn around and teach their students in that same way. And I was just amazed by the power, the excitement, the objectivity, the openness, the way it opened minds to teachers that you would assume had already decided. Two or three of the teachers would say as we went along, well, that's not what I always thought, but this is really interesting. So it created a lot of excitement, and it really opened a lot of minds and thinking. And I think that's precisely what we want to be doing.
Before we continue with our conversation, I'd like to take a moment and ask you to learn a little more about the Ashbrook Center and how you can help us continue our work with teachers, students, and citizens.
I'm Chad Kiefer, Director of Philanthropy and Strategic Partnerships here at Ashbrook. At its heart, America's story is about the lives of patriots who have given their last full measure of devotion to preserve and protect what it means to be an American. But the tragic truth is that the American story is being rewritten as one of oppression and despair. Back in 1776, the founders took a chance when they created a new government built on principles of liberty. They took a chance on America. Now I'm challenging you to do the same. Your gift to Ashbrook today reaches students, teachers, and citizens across the country, helping them to understand why America is worthy of their devotion. With so many forces eroding our history and taking away from our principles, isn't it time we give America a chance? Your investment is encouraged now more than ever. Please visit us today at ashbrook.org/support.
Right. And that's the kind of education that you say, what's the, how do we restore civic education? Get that kind of education in the classroom, bring it to life in that really interesting way.
Right.
One of the things that was startling to me, I think you had already known this a little bit, but very startling to me in working on our book was the unfortunately, how many teachers don't have the opportunity themselves to have had that kind of really interesting, engaging education.
Right. As you know, Jeff, I started working some part-time with Ashbrook back when Roger Beckett was in your position. And Roger explained that he had prepared himself to be a teacher, and he got a master's degree in a top American university. And yet he figured out that all he had learned there was pedagogy, how to teach, but he hadn't learned the content of what he was going to teach. And one of the reasons that he kind of turned the Ashbrook Center in this direction was how poorly educated he thought teachers had been in the content of American history and civics. You and I studied this more deeply and found, first of all, there's almost no requirement of knowledge by teachers in this field before they go into the classroom. There's very little required in terms of teacher certification in the state certification process that requires teachers to be prepared. So the teachers themselves have not been well served and are not really prepared to teach civics in a knowledgeable and certainly not in a compelling or exciting way.
Yeah, one of the things that I was shocked by was, I think it was a study by Diane Ravitch that showed that upwards of 70% of teachers who are teaching U.S. history and government do not have a degree in those areas, in those subject areas. Yeah. And what a disservice that is to them, who then feel like when they come into a classroom, they have to just read the textbook and stay, you know, just this far ahead of their students.
Precisely.
Because that's the unfortunate, difficult task that's been put on them.
Right. And of course, again, as you and I point out, that they're relying on textbooks, which are boring at best and biased at worst. So even the crutch they're leaning on is not very reliable.
So we really need teachers who know their subject, who love their subject, and who love sparking students thinking about that subject and getting into the how and the why. I'm sure our listeners are thinking, okay, that sounds great, but how do we actually do that? How can, as a country, how can we do it? And I think it's, you know, working again off your work in the Hatch Report, our last chapter, we said, let's lay out some to-dos for educators and for policymakers. Take us through some of those that you thought were very important.
Well, my to-dos are a little more, again, on the policy government side. I think you're better with the to-dos on the educator side. On the policy side, the players who can most influence the amount of civic education being taught and the fact that it should be taught from kindergarten right on through high school, even college. The people who can get that done are, frankly, in state legislatures and state school boards. And we simply need them to step up and require civics beginning in kindergarten. There are great ways to teach age-appropriate civics and history. Students love stories. That could be the emphasis in the elementary years. Stories about America, stories about great Americans. Builds a great base, a vocabulary for history and civics. In junior high school, you can get more into the how questions, how do things work. I'm excited about a new Civics Bee that's been launched in the last year that's kind of like the famous Spelling Bee nationwide. There's a Civics Bee that's catching on among junior high schoolers, creating some excitement outside the classroom for civics. By high school, as you say, we should be asking the why questions. We should have a year-long course in civics and government, not just one semester. And it should be of a much higher quality, which again, I think you're more prepared to talk about. How can we better prepare teachers and the classroom for this?
Yeah, it seems like one thing we have to do is give teachers the opportunity to get deep content knowledge, right, so that they don't feel like just barely keeping ahead of students, that they really feel like they know the subject, that they are masters of the subject. Not just if they go back and get a master's degree, which is important, but that they actually get this in their undergraduate experience. And there's much more content and much less pedagogy. And then the content is really focused on primary sources and understanding how to engage students and using primary sources to engage students in these big questions, whether the primary sources are stories, as you were mentioning, the what or the how or the why, the Declaration of Independence, the Gettysburg Address, the Constitution, Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, you know, documents that tell the story of America and that you can get at. Because I was really struck by your metaphor, which I like. I think you got it from your father, who was a baker. But this metaphor of thinking of civic education as a layer cake.
Right.
So sometimes it's, you know, you take a course and it's sort of chronological. You take a history class in eighth grade, you do this, then ninth grade, you do the next period, the 10th grade, and you never loop back to anything. You never build on anything. You just go through it and you're finished with it. And it's really amazing to me that I think about only half the states require a U.S. history course in high school that includes anything on the U.S. founding. So the last time students might study the U.S. founding is in eighth grade. These are students who are going to graduate, right, and go on and be voters,
right,
and they don't have that experience. So talk a little bit about this idea of civic education as a layer cake that builds on itself.
Yeah, as I mentioned, we're in a lot of states, we're down to a one semester class in high school, which is too little, too late. The students don't know the vocabulary. They don't know the issues. They're not familiar with the characters. So you start building the layer cake in kindergarten. And frankly, you start at the family dinner table, as Ronald Reagan said in his farewell address, with parents talking to their kids about how important America is. And in the summer, taking their vacations and their field trips to sites where, you know, great American history has been played out, and talking to them about that. So it begins at the family dinner table. It moves into the early elementary years, the telling of the stories of America. Why did we do the Pledge of Allegiance? What are the songs of America about? I mean, there's just plenty of ways to be introducing young children to the narrative of American history and civics. And then, as you say, you build on that and you have a curriculum required in your state that requires that certain topics be addressed at a grade by grade level. And they begin to build the layer cake. And it builds right on through high school, culminating in this year long course, not starting and ending with the one semester course in civics. So I think it's a powerful metaphor. I think it's something states could work with. I think, Jeff, as I understand it, you're even working on a model curriculum at Ashbrook that might follow that model.
We're trying to develop classroom resources that that allow teachers exactly to do that, and that teachers will have the freedom to be able to do that. And where we've seen teachers adopt these resources and change the classroom,
right,
we have seen the kind of results that you experienced in your seminar with teachers in Chicago. We've seen them with teachers and their students in their own classroom, wherever they are in the country, at all different grade levels and all different ability levels, which is also very interesting to me. It tells me that it's really tapping into something fundamental about the students and how they learn and what they want to learn, that is really important to them, if it's done right.
Another thing I like about what you're doing, Jeff, is it avoids a problem we have in our country that I've come to appreciate or not appreciate, presentism. And that is taking our values and perspectives as 21st century Americans, back to whatever period in history we're studying. And that's not helpful to apply our understanding today to what was being done 100, 200 years ago. I'd like to describe it this way. When we travel back in American history, we should leave our 21st century lens at TSA. We should be required to check our 21st century lens. And by looking at the primary documents of the time and engaging the documents and debates of the time, you're setting that aside and you're looking at it as they had to look at the Depression and the New Deal, as they had to look at the Civil War. And it leads to a much more objective and frankly less politicized debate. We live in a time when everything's politicized. It's actually less politicized if you can take off those 21st century lenses and study history in its own terms and on its own timetable.
So now that you've worked, you've published the Hatch Report, now that you and I have worked on this book and published it, and you've spent so many years thinking about this, I'm just very curious. I'm not sure we've actually had this conversation before. and particularly on this question, and I'm sure our listeners will want to know, okay, are you hopeful?
There's a good reason not to be hopeful, and that is the situation is pretty grim right now in civic education. The reason to be hopeful, and I am hopeful for this reason. This is not a problem that requires Washington to come in and fix it, where we're hopelessly conflicted and we're out of money. And in fact, we probably don't even want Washington to come in and fix it, since education is one of few things that's still primarily a state and local matter. We don't even need a billionaire like Bill Gates or Warren Buffett to fund a big solution to this. We don't need a big solution. We need lots of small and medium solutions. And they're in the hands of lots of different people. They're in the hands of parents. They're in the hands of teachers. They're in the hands of state legislators, of school board members, of people creating spelling bees, of civic groups that host oratory contests and pass out the Constitution and so forth. So it's an all hands on deck kind of project. And that's what makes me hopeful. What you're doing is helping. What the Civics Bee is doing is helping. So we can get lots of hands on deck engaging in this. And hopefully books like ours will be a kind of a wake-up call, a kind of a cheerleader. Perhaps more leaders in Washington need to become cheerleaders for this kind of project. And so that's the reason to be hopeful, is it doesn't call out for a big fix, an expensive fix in a contentious time. It calls out for dozens and dozens of small and medium fixes in the hands of lots of different people.
Yeah. As long as we get the fundamental principles right, we can take those steps, each one of us, as you say, in all the different ways, right, and move the country in a direction. It took decades to get here. It's going to take a little while to right. get out of the crisis. It's not just like an economic depression that or a recession you fix in 12 months, right, but it will take years. But yeah, I share your hope. And where we see it and where we actually conduct these kind of programs and people use our resources, we actually do see the change. We actually do see the transformation, which tells you that out in the field, the case studies show it actually works.
Right, right. And I'm happy to be part of it. As you know, I kind of chose Ashbrook as what I thought was the best in the field at improving civic education, and continue to support it financially and help as an advisor when I can, and do some writing and so forth. So I think you folks are very much on the right track. And you've emerged in recent years as really a major national leader in the field. And it's a good thing, because you have what I call, as you know, Jeff, you have the secret sauce, which is the use of primary documents, which I think solves so many problems and challenges in our current teaching of civic education and U.S. history.
Well, David, thanks for taking years and pushing along the project for our book, A Republic, If We Can Teach It. Thank you personally to you, David, but also, of course, thank you for your service to the country in education, in higher education, and now in civic education. Yep. David Davenport, thanks for taking the time to be with me today on The American Idea.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The American Idea. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and leave a 5-star review. If you want to learn more or get involved in Ashbrook's vital work, visit our website, ashbrook.org.